the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
I can tell you right now, the devil is not making Justin think twice about any of the bets he's got this week. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm excited to say it, and there's going to be clapping here for a second. Jay, it's Masters Week, baby. It is Masters Week. Something we look forward to for, you know, it's weird. I would say for 364 days of the year, but you know what? We just got one of these 5 months ago in November, so we're really getting a really nice, fun, quick turnaround. My co-host, Justin Marcus, how you doing today, buddy?
Dude, I'm happy. I've got like $80 already sprinkled across the Masters. I'm happy to be able to gamble on this one. And yeah, we just had one recently. So got green jacket. Let's whip it out and let's go.
Let's whip it out. That's the first thing you decide to say. Let's whip it out. And we have the stat man, Russ Ivanek, tell us all about how bad our bets are going to be.
Oh, I guess I'm also ready to whip it out. Let's get rolling.
easy said and done. Jay, when we get to this Masters thing, I do want to get your opinion on one thing, because it was November, but it's just going to be such a different Masters with conditions and all that, so it's going to be fun to talk about. But before we do that, Final Four has ended, National Championship has ended. Still, we go without a perfect season. Gonzaga falling short. Really thought this was the team that was going to get a chance to do it. I know I could see Russ in the corner. I know Russ had the Zags. I unfortunately made the decision of going with U of M. We'll get to that when we get to that. But Zags fall short, losing 86-70 to just a juggernaut of a Baylor Bears team. This team was just tearing people apart. Had multiple guys in double-digit scoring and really just never let Gonzaga come up for air. Just never gave him even a remote chance. Anytime the Zags made a little momentum, Baylor found a way to stop it and turn it around. And, I mean, I don't think I'd be the only one here who would say I'm astonished at how well this Baylor Bears team played.
Oh, absolutely. It was very frustrating, if I can get selfish for a bit. We have this basketball trophy at work, and we do it every year for the bracket, and I've won two straight years. And the thing's like 20 years old, and no one's ever won it three times, and I was Gonzaga winning away from being the first person to do it. So I am very bitter. Damn you, Baylor Bears. But they were unstoppable. The game wasn't even close for almost the entire game. I think it was like 4 minutes in. There was a 7-point difference in their scores, and it never got any closer. Like, it's ridiculous. And what really blew me away is the biggest difference in these two teams, just at a high level statistically, is the tempo they play at. Gonzaga had top 10 tempo, right? Just most possessions per 40 minutes. Baylor was one of the worst. Baylor 213th in the country as far as tempo goes. The tempo in this game, if you told me that it was going to go well, that Baylor was going to score more than 80 points, you know, I'd think, hey, they played their game exactly. No, they played Gonzaga's game. They almost played exactly to what Gonzaga's tempo was. Baylor played out of their normal comfort level, let's call it, and kicked ass the whole way through. If I have to see one more meme, though, that says we live with the football team, I might lose my mind. But everything else was incredibly impressive all the way around.
It was very impressive. I don't know anything else in life that you can do and fail at it more dramatically when you turn it over. Like, if you turn anything over and take no possession of something, you're going to fail. I think they had 14 turnovers by the time it was like 3 or 4 minutes into the second half already. And if you're not possessing the ball, you're not scoring. And if Baylor did it perfectly. I hated it. I lost more money. I'm officially retiring from betting on college hoops. I've been one season in and I'm done. Because what you think you know goes right out the window. And we don't get the perfect season for the Zags. I bet a lot of people lost money. And Baylor shocked us with how fast they played. So
it hurts. Zags finished with 14 total turnovers. Largest margin or largest lead at one point was 20 points for the Baylor Bears. So,
like I said, in the championship.
But now that we look back at it, obviously a perfect season would have been amazing to see. But when we look back at this, guys, I think the more, like, the other reason this was more fun was, one, we were a year, we didn't get March Madness last year. So we literally were 2 years since the last time we saw this. So everybody got a little more into it for that. But two, there was no, this wasn't a Duke, North Carolina, like all the big name schools, Kentucky, that are just staples to always be there and go deep. We didn't have that this year. In fact, if you were a favored team, you got picked off fairly quickly for a while there. It was, you know, we saw Ohio State fall. We saw teams like Oral Roberts. We saw teams like Loyola make these pushes and play well. And for me, I don't know about you guys, that was the enjoyable thing, was you got to see some teams that, unless you stay up until 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday to watch West Coast coverage, you don't see some of these teams play. And that was, for me, an enjoyable side of this.
I'd agree with that. I've watched more hoops this year than ever before, and being able to see upsets happen, even though like the numbers are kind of like artificial in terms of rankings, because there's no what I call cross pollination between the conferences. Mm-hmm. It was phenomenal. Like it was like I know people who were against it. Like, oh my god, there's too many 11s, 12s, and 15s, and 9s, and 8s. It's like, no, dude, it's chaos. Just be in the mud for a little bit and enjoy it. I watched UCLA more than I think I watched Michigan State this year.
Yeah. Well, but and that's
you
what
probably enjoyed it more.
Absolutely. But that's what March Madness gives you, though. Imagine if instead of doing seeding like they do, at the end of the season, they looked at the MLB or the NHL and said, okay, everybody's in, but it's only one game. So you got to play, you lose, you're out. You can't imagine the anarchy you get, because it means you really do only have to win one game. They do seven-game series. Gonzaga probably wins the national championship because they figure out how to get past Baylor. But in a one game, it's you go all out as hard as you can for as long as you can, and you know Baylor comes out with the victory, Russ. It's one of those things where that's the beauty of March Madness, is a 12 seed legitimately can take out anyone if they can just have one night of really good basketball.
Oh, absolutely. And we call it March Madness for a reason, yeah. Right? Like, that's the fun. Who's Sister Jean? We only – she's a national icon now because of March Madness and because we get these upsets. No, anyone who doesn't like an upset is someone who doesn't want anything but burnt bread on their toast. Like, no, you are the most boring person. That's not why we watch sports, right? It's foolish, and you're still going to get – what do we still get? The consensus two top teams in the tournament in the finals. It usually still shakes out that way, even though it's one team or one game elimination. It's not like a 16 seed has ever beat a one still.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're making it even to the Elite Eight. It's have fun.
Here's what I want to know, though, because Coach Mosier, who coached Loyola Chicago, is now the head coach at Oklahoma. He took the Oklahoma Sooner guys. Does Sister Jean come to Tulsa? Like, do we get Sister Jean in Norman? I'm sorry, in Norman. Does Sister Jean come as part of that package? Because I'm all here for it. Unless she's just going to stay in Loyola Chicago, because flying or traveling that much at 100 years old could maybe not be the greatest thing. But I want to know, does Sister Jean come with this? Because I'm all in for it. My wife, obviously a big Oklahoma Sooner fan growing up in that state. So, give me Sister Jean on the sideline at Norman at a football game. Imagine that. Her and Lincoln Riley just dancing after a Big 12 championship. That'd be great. I'm good for it.
I don't want her anywhere near that wagon.
Oh, God.
They
could bring her out on that wagon. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, they could bring her out on that wagon.
We don't need that.
Yeah, we don't need that. But in all seriousness, so I do want to ask, because we've never seen it in our lifetime, and it's been since, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, either the 60s or the early 70s, since we've seen a team go coast-to-coast undefeated and win the tournament. So, again, it's only been, I guess, now 60 years, so that is a big number. Do we see one in our lifetime, or is March Madness just too unpredictable for there to ever really, for the stars to line up the way they did? Because back in those days, the tournament wasn't as big. There wasn't as many teams. Now you got to get through so many teams to do it.
No, I think we're done seeing undefeated teams. This was the chance, because it was a weird year with a contracted schedule, right? And you're only playing your conference. So Gonzaga came close, and that was under very special circumstances. No, I mean,
you hit it right on the head that there's too many games now, right? Even if you're an overwhelming favorite, what is that, a 70% chance of winning? Mm-hmm. You play enough of those games, you're going to come up on the 30% side eventually, just by chance. It sucks. I want to see it.
Like, what if, like, a Duke or someone starts paying athletes in Bitcoin to show up and come to their school no matter what? You get some super squad, and they do it. It's got to be illegal. The only way it happens it's got to be fraudulent.
They already do that.
Didn't you hear they're doing that now? There's that big story. There's a big story out. I don't know if either of you guys have heard this. We're going to go off topic for a minute. There's a big story. When we were in high school, MTV had a show called Two-A-Days, and it was followed this really great football team, high school football team in Alabama. Well, this coach has moved on, and the other day there was audio caught of him talking about how Georgia and Alabama are so competitive because they shell out $60,000 to $90,000 a prospect to pay for them to come to Alabama or to live in Alabama, and that once Saban and Smart walk away, now what, this guy could just be, you know, flapping his gums to show off to people, but when once these guys go away, you're just going to hear about these regimes being teared to the ground because the NCAA doesn't want to mess with it while Nick Saban's doing so well for college football. So let's be honest. It's happening all over the country. But, I mean, yeah, I don't know that you could ever get away with it. And I don't know that, hey, don't ever speak about Coach K like that. He doesn't pay the players. He just brings good players.
Mm-hmm.
Just
like your boss.
He plays for a team that can pay you. Payroll pays you. Mm-hmm. Go see accounts receivable.
Yeah.
They're the Devils. Hello.
Go see that assistant coach that somehow is going to get a bench job wherever you get drafted in the first round because it was part of the deal. He's the fall guy. Exactly. Honestly, Jay, I don't think we ever see one. Like we said, there's just too much chaos in it that you're already asking for so much to go right just to win a national championship. But then stack on, Russ, that you have to try to go undefeated in the regular season on top of having it's just I don't even want to do that math because I didn't get to that math in high school, but the odds really are ever against you.
Say you play 30 games.
They play 30 games. Yep.
Well, I didn't mean literally say it. If you play 30 games and you're the 95% favorite, right, literally unheard of odds, that's a 21% chance that you're going to win every one of those games.
Okay.
One in five. One in five seasons, if you are the most dominant team we've ever seen, you'll go undefeated if you play 30 games. Really, really unlikely.
Yeah, it's very unlikely. But that's also, you have to maintain that kind of dominance for such a long amount of time for it to stack out.
Injuries.
But think about it. Think what we've seen. I'll say in the last 20 years. Think about what we've seen from the Carolinas and the Kentuckys and the Dukes, where they're just churning out all-star team after all-star team after all-star team. And even those guys finish the year like 27-3, which is still a phenomenal record. But that's just to get through the regular season. And then guess what? You got to win 7 or 8 more games in a row just to even have a chance at that national championship. So I agree. I don't think we'll ever see it. I would love to see it. I don't even like, it's reached the point now where it's something that's so unattainable. You say, I don't even really care who does it. I just want to see it. But in reality, I do care who does it. I don't want to see Michigan State do it. I don't want to see Ohio State do it. I want to see Michigan.
That's not fair.
No.
I would allow Juwan Howard to do it if I had the power, and I would congratulate him.
That's because you're a closet Wolverine when it comes to Michigan basketball. Yeah.
I'm very open about how I feel about Juwan Howard and their program. I like them.
That's good. You should.
You should have mutual respect.
Hey, look,
if Izzo does it, you should bow down and kiss that man's feet.
If you go back and listen to the audio over the last couple of years, I have been nothing but respectful. I have said, I think Tom Izzo is arguably going to go down as one of the best college basketball coaches that we've ever seen. And the fact of the matter is, he legitimately did it in a time where he had to go toe-to-toe with Coach K, with Roy Williams, with Calipari. He had one of the toughest hills to climb going against all these great, and then he had to go against Beilein, who was no slouch. I think if Beilein had stayed, he could have really stacked it on, but he chose to move on and do other things. So he really had a tough go of it. Not to mention he had to coach against Oh my God, what was his name? At Indiana, Bobby Knight. He had to coach against Bobby Knight. So
a chair just got thrown at you.
Yeah, absolutely did. And to do what he did, I mean, winning a national championship. At one point, I was telling Aaron this the other night. At one point, they had a streak where if you played for Tom Izzo for all 4 years, you were guaranteed to be in a Final Four. That's
unreal.
It's impossible to stack up with that. So I always give respect to Izzo, but that doesn't mean that when Michigan and Michigan State line up, that I'm ever going to go State. It's just not going to happen.
At least we have Phil Mickelson. That's our saving.
I would hope that's not the only thing that bonds us, but.
Oh, but did you see how they threw the O in Boston? They put a line through it, and they said that's the finish line of the marathon. Okay. Nike. This is what they do. This is why everyone was afraid when they got the NFL contract, because they went, oh, God, Nike's going to be on their bullshit again. And besides, you know, like the two-tone Jag stuff and the digital alarm clock Tampa Bay Buccaneer uniforms, they've mostly been muted. I'm scared now. NFL might be lifting that one shell rule. Nike might Nike all over the NFL soon.
Well, they're very, very not good. And don't get me wrong, over the years we've seen swing and misses. But when your team has a color in its name, you think that's not a color you really want to go away from. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like the Chicago White Sox, there should probably be white in that jersey at some point. I don't think purple is a color you really want to add in there and see how it works out. So it's just weird and it's kind of uncomfortable. But I want to ask you guys, because we've had this topic in the past, but now we kind of have something to play it off. Is it the worst alt jersey when it comes to a team? Because we've seen some bad ones. Russ has a hat on, and I think that could tell us maybe where he's headed. But is it the worst alt jersey you guys have seen?
First off, it's a great day. Any day we can talk about uniforms. I'm scratching this itch, and I love it.
I know.
No, it's not the worst, unfortunately, because if you take it away from all context, it's not an awful-looking uniform, in my opinion. It doesn't make any sense for the Red Sox, granted, but it's okay. The numbers are kind of shitty. I'm wearing this hat, which, if you can't tell, is a black and teal Golden State Warriors hat, which provides my answer of anytime your alternate has exactly nothing to do with any of your team's colors, that's the bad one. That's the bad one, and that should be outlawed. Never mind contradictory stuff like this. Oh, and we saw it with the Blue Jackets, right? Blue Jackets and the Blues, both came out with all red uniforms this year. As you can tell, not a Blue Jacket. That was actually the other side, and not the Blues. But it's, for me, I mean, I want to pick on the Red Wings reverse retro practice jerseys, but hey, everyone's got to have a practice jersey in their bag, I guess. I'm going to go with the Steelers Bumblebee throwback as the worst
you
one.
You take that back.
I am with him, though. I am with him. The Bumblebee ones are awful. They're just
awful. It looks like what I would imagine staring at a speed limit sign would look like if I was on an intense acid trip. It's got the block numbers for some reason. I get that it's supposed to go back to the Leatherhead era, right, with that kind of throwback. It just didn't look like that. It's not even close. And the weird-ass stripes, it's tough to watch. Sometimes it looks like your TV's skipping. And it's 2021. It's not 1997, so that's not cool anymore. Right? My TV's not 5 feet deep. I shouldn't be getting that appearance. They're awful, dude. They're just so bad.
I hate this. Do you like Phil Mickelson? Can we agree on that?
What's a Phil Mickelson?
Oh. So that's your answer? That's your worst one?
That's my answer. That's the worst one, because that was tough to watch.
At least worse than Boston.
Much worse than Boston.
I'm not going to go too far. I might check some of the criteria boxes. Eric, I don't know. You might need to save us here with Russ's answer, but I can't stand Tampa Bay's creamsicle. The creamsicle shit, a little bit of red, it's like off orange, like a rose color, whatever. I actually, this is going to be weird, and I think Russ is going to hate me on this, but both the Devils and the Habs in the NHL, I understand it is a throwback to a prior color, but just changing your pants doesn't make it a throwback. And the Habs have changed their pants to brown, and the Devils have changed their pants to green, and considered that a throwback, and it irks me when I see those pants.
The Habs have been around forever. I have no idea why they can't do a single good throwback. It blows my mind. They're all, I will take issue with the Devils one. They should have green in their colors. Period. That, red and black's too damn plain, right? That's everybody. That's a practice jersey. No, that should have more green. But no, you're dead on with the other one.
And my last one that I believe is worse than all of these is we have a team that says go green, go white. I'm pretty sure we're not go electric yellow green. That is not in our slogan. And Nike did those as well. And I cannot stand those state uniforms that say state across the chest in a ugly color that has nothing to do with us.
The yoga pants chest?
Juicy. It's bad. Yes, daddy. Like, it's terrible.
All very good answers. I am with Russ. I think the Bumblebee uniforms are awful. I think that's almost as bad as Green Bay with yellow and blue, which doesn't make any sense. Look, the popular answer would be to say that I, like when you brought up electric yellow, would be to say the Seattle Seahawks, but I like those jerseys, so I'm not going to go with them. But I am going to go with one where, look, you're a team on, you're a football team on the rise. You're making strides to get better. You made the playoffs this year. You're making moves. Your team is still a reference used by people to say, I have to go take a poop, which is taking the Browns to the Super Bowl. So when you, if that's already something ingrained in people's mind, don't wear all brown jerseys. All brown. Brown pants, brown shirt. Because people are going to understand when you shit the bed because you're wearing pants that you could shit in and no one would notice. So for me, go back to the classics. Orange helmet, you can wear a brown jersey, and then white pants. Because all brown, that's not helping you any. I get you're the Cleveland Browns. And in reality, you're doing exactly what the Red Sox aren't doing and just embracing your team color. But it's not a color you want to embrace. That's why I enjoy when they actually wear the orange jerseys with the brown lettering. Because at least that, okay, now you got the team colors and you got them the right way. You're wearing shit pants, my friends. You need to not do that.
I deeply appreciate how you took this full circle of the Red Sox not living up to their name and the Browns way too much doing so. But let me throw it back to you guys because that's actually a pet peeve of mine. Football teams that wear pants and tops that are the exact same color. Mm-hmm. Looks like a leotard to me. It drives me insane. I hate it. I hate the color rush uniforms for that reason.
So you don't like that one mostly. Do you not like the blue ones that the Lions do?
Blue on blue? No.
The blue on blue?
I don't like when they're the same.
See, I don't mind I don't mind the gray ones.
That one looks like a sweatsuit to me. Oh, okay. It's your gray top and gray bottom.
I hate the gray ones.
Okay.
The gray ones are the worst.
I don't mind the gray ones. I like the blue ones. I get that. For most cases, yes. But see, and that's why, like, if you've got, like good colors, then yes, maybe, like I really like when Atlanta does the all-black ones. I think that looks cool. I do. They have all-black with red. I'm okay with those. But yeah, like brown, you're not going to get away with that well. So yeah, I see what you're saying, but like, then you got to look at it though, Russ. Like, I personally think like the Texans wear those all blue ones all the time and they seem to work.
I think they pop so much more when they're with the white pants.
Okay.
The white top. That's why I'm asking.
You're a traditionalist.
Yeah.
I am. I kind of am. you're a traditionalist. Like, I enjoy Denver and Los Angeles Rams. Those two color rushes were excellent. That electric blue and that crimson orange, or whatever the hell you want to describe it with an adjective. I loved those two color rushes.
Okay.
The ketchup and mustard game?
The ketchup.
That's what I think.
That was awesome.
No, I see exactly what you're saying. Like, I guess I've never really, like, for me, it's almost like it's on a different, it depends on the team basis. Like Jay said, I like the Rams and the Charger ones, like the all like light blue with the yellow. I have no problem with those. Those look great. But then, yeah, you get like the Cleveland Browns and it doesn't work. And you get other teams where like it just does, like, I guess the big comparison is the fact that like the New Orleans Saints have been doing it for the last 30 years and no one seems to notice that they're always in all black when they go out there. It's either all black or all white. There's no difference in the pants and all that.
Their all-white one is actually the only exception I can think of for that rule for me personally. I love that one, and it baffles me why I'm okay with that, but not all the other ones. That one looks good.
Yeah, I won't understand that. But, yeah, I guess for me it's just kind of on a individual basis. It just depends on the team and how they do it. Like, all, I'm kind of Rolodexing through them all in my head, and I guess, like, I don't have a problem with the Carolina with the powder blue all the way up and down. I think that one works, and that one works
for
me. Sexy. Speaking of Carolina, Sam Darnold, now the starting quarterback, or assumed to be the starting quarterback for them, trading to the Jets. Obviously, we're going to talk draft here as we get a little closer to it and start breaking all this down, but it's starting to look like we might be watching four straight quarterbacks go off the board, and it'll be unprecedented, but we'll get to that another time. But we're going to talk about two guys that, one we did draft, the other one we signed through free agency along the way, but both became staples in Detroit. For probably, I think we can say they're some of the best players to play here in the last 20 years. One of them, you can make arguments, one of the greatest hockey players of all time for how good he really was. I saw this on Woodward Sports the other day, and we just had to bring it over here and have the debate, because very rarely do we pick up topics, as you can see, where we don't all see eye to eye. We usually are kind of all on the same page, but I know in this one, at least two of us do not see eye to eye on this, and so I want to have this conversation. The question is, you can only keep one of these guys. They don't even play the same sport, but only one of them can ever be in Detroit. And that is Pavel Datsyuk of the Detroit Red Wings or Chauncey Billups of the Detroit Pistons. Both very vital in their teams winning championships. Datsyuk got two, I believe. Yes. So very vital in winning championships. Both top players when they were here. Both made all-stars and were, you know, very decorated. So the question is, if you can only keep one, who do you keep? Justin Deserve.
Oh, God. I had a really hard time doing this. Everything that I would put together as a piece of evidence, I could literally just flip a coin and it would work both ways. Like Billups going on 5 years on five different teams, getting picked up and Detroit making him, or him making Detroit at that time, was excellent. Datsyuk getting drafted a sixth round or something crazy stupid. Like, both players came to Detroit, established their games, and they called games 24/7, whether it was a shootout, a third period goal, a buzzer beater, a playoff, anything. These guys called game 24/7. And Chauncey doing no-look passes all the time, Datsyuk doing drop passes, like, they are comparable. So one thing that, one thing I looked at to try to help decide this for me, apparently Hockey Reference and Basketball Reference is a new feature, or maybe I'm just learning how to use the internet. They're called similarity scores. And they try to look at a player and, damn it. All right, they're trying to compare. And, like, I have to give the edge to Chauncey based on some of the players that he's being compared to. You've got Russell Westbrook, Dwayne Wade, Clyde Drexler, Ray Allen, Allen Iverson, and James Harden. Some of Pavel's are great as well, but, like, Billups was clutch. I think Pav has a lot of talent that could, like, convolute your decision, but it might shock you. I might just go with Billups when we're done with this conversation. I'm going to keep his ass.
Okay.
Yeah, that did shock me. So, in making us pick between Billups and Datsyuk, my first thought was, hey, calm down, Satan. can we not?
Like, difficult.
To peel back the onion here, like, I'm just trying to get through my week, and then Eric's like, hey, want to stress poop about something? I've got a question for the pod. Okay, thanks. I guess I'll just worry about which championship from my childhood do I want to just have erased, because I mean, can anyone make the argument that if you take these guys off, their team still win without them?
I
mean,
I can.
Oh, you can?
Ooh.
Okay.
Well, all right.
We will get to that. I will make my points quickly then. because my opinion is they probably don't win without either of them.
Okay.
You're talking about a Red Wings team in 08 that Dan Cleary of Danny Cleary Hockey School had the fifth most points on that team. That's how, outside of Zetterberg, that's how bereft of offensive talent that team was. They were a very strong team defensively. Very strong. Deep blue line, right? Offensively, the plan was get on the power play and score. Otherwise, give it to Hank or Pavel. That was it. That was the entirety of their offensive structure. And maybe that wins you a couple rounds. Hey, Torts has made a life out of it. I'm trying to coach that way. But do you get over Sid and Gino in the Stanley Cup Finals with just that? Maybe not. I think not. And we lose the legend of Datsuki and Deeks in Detroit, which honestly, that stinks maybe more than anything else. Not to be able to do that. Logan Couture probably appreciates that he has his ankles back, but everything else is bad news. Phillips, you're looking at Mike James and Chucky Atkins were the backup point guards on that title team. That's rough, right? That's not winning you much as the primary ball handler. The only thing that I can come up with, and ultimately I'm going to take that suit for selfish reasons, but the only thing I can come up with is maybe if Phillips doesn't join, then that means Dwayne Wade does get picked instead of Darko the following year after Phillips would have joined. So now you have Dwayne Wade as your primary ball handler instead of Chauncey. Hey, maybe you got a shot there, even though, hey, he's in his second year in the league in 04 when they won the title. I can talk myself into that as opposed to any other sixth-round pick that they would have taken instead of Datsuk. But I think you're taking rafters down either way.
Okay. I like it. I am going to firmly believe that you take Phillips out. There are no rings. No matter how you want to work it anywhere or another, there are no rings. You take Datsuk out, there's still a cup. There's still a cup.
Sure.
There's still a cup in my opinion. And it is for that reason. Just going off the cup I remember, the 08 Stanley Cup, you take him out. And again, I'm naming names here that might not mean anything to the outside listener, but to Red Wings fans, they still carry some weight. You still have Zetterberg. You still have guys like Abdelkader. You have guys like, I mean, I guess Draper and Lindstrom, and they were getting up there, but they still remember how to win. They have that many Stanley Cups for a reason. You have guys like Maltby. You have Osgood. You have Hasek. You have good goaltending. You have the Mule, who was playing great at that time until Babcock decided to kill him. You have Filppula. You have all these guys that, yes, I looked at it. Datsuk in the playoffs had ten goals, so that's something. That he is good, but I'm just saying you can take Datsuk out, and there's still a lot of talent on that team that can find a way to do it. Rush, you kind of made my point saying you take Chauncey out. It's Chucky Atkins and Lindsey Hunter. Neither of those guys are going to do it. But also, you take Chauncey out. There's no half-court shot against the Nets to put it in overtime to give them a chance to get to the finals. So you'll take Datsuk for the Datsuk and Deke. I'll take Chauncey for the fact that he was really one of those guys that once he got across half-court, you had to guard him or the ball could go in. He was just that kind of guy with that kind of shooting ability. Not to mention, we talk about the Euro Twins and what we got with that. But Richard Hamilton and Chauncey Billups make up one of the best backcourts we've seen in a long time. They were very good together. Now, that team was a complete, it had to all be there for it to work. You take one piece out, it's not going to work. It's the same as like with the Red Wings. Like, there are certain pieces that you take out and the formula's not there. And Datsuk could be argued as one of those. But when you look at Billups, Hamilton, the Wallaces, and then you look at Tayshaun, one of those pieces leave, it's almost impossible for them to get past the Lakers. So for me personally, I think it has to be Chauncey. Not taking anything away from Datsuk. I love Pavel Datsuk. He was one of my favorite players growing up because of what he could do with a hockey puck and the fact that I could never do any of that, even when I was playing with him as a video game. So Chauncey, though, I was a basketball kid. I loved playing that game. I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to be Chauncey out on my hoop in my driveway. 3 seconds left, shooting a jump shot to beat the Nets to go to the finals. That's what I wanted to do, and Chauncey gave me a chance to see that. So for me, it's Chauncey Billups.
What I kind of love about this question, too, is they're both the exact encapsulation of what those teams were in the era.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Chauncey Billups was picked up from the scrap heap, more or less, like the rest of those players were, minus like the Rasheed Wallace trade. Datsuk was a super late pick from a country that wasn't scouted as highly or trusted of the prospects as much. Oh, like all of those other stars were that the Wings had of the era. So you're basically asking, hey, do you want to take out the heart of the Red Wings? Or do you want to take out the heart of the Pistons? I hate you for asking the question.
Why, I love the question. I love it.
It's...
You know, the one thing I'm liking, too, is your scenario of Dwayne Wade. Like, Chauncey's compatibility score highest was Dwayne Wade. So, like, if we lose Chauncey, but then we get Dwayne, and I have Dwayne and Pav, probably having the same conversation again.
we have the same doubt. I mean, yeah. I mean, that I'm Chauncey, a shooter who worked as the primary ball handler. Dwayne Wade, a shooter who worked as the primary ball handler. I mean, it's, yeah, probably similar. I think Chauncey later in his career leaned more towards the point guard role, whereas Dwayne Wade was maybe a little more cutter and shooting guard. But, yeah, I mean, that was my best reasoning that I made myself feel better, is that if I lose Billups, then maybe I can talk myself into Joe not taking Darko, and maybe that's worth it alone. And then you get...
I guess we got to be happy we got both of them. That's damn good talent not to lose one of those.
Well, but see, I also think that, unfortunately, we're looking at it in this perspective, but I personally think if Chauncey isn't on that team, one, I don't think Tayshaun's on that team. I think instead of taking Tayshaun, those guys, because I looked in this draft, there were a lot of big names that went in Tayshaun's draft. Yao Ming, Amari Stoudemire, Caron Butler, guys like Carlos Boozer, who actually went after Tayshaun. But I think they would have tried to find a way to move up and get an offensive talent, probably a point guard, to go with Rip. And then, you know what? You probably see what everybody wanted at that time. You probably see Carmelo Anthony on this team. So you probably have a first-year guard playing backcourt with Rip, and you have Carmelo Anthony coming in to be the scorer. Because then it's not on that point guard anymore. It's on Rip and Melo to do it instead of Chauncey and Rip to do it. I personally think that's what you get.
I don't know. I think that kind of worked against you. That, like, hey, there's still a stream there where you can have a superstar on your team.
But I'm saying it doesn't lead to a title. I said if you take either of these guys out, there are no titles. I don't subscribe to the belief that everybody says, oh, well, if we had, instead of drafting Darko, if we had drafted Carmelo, we would have won multiple championships. I don't subscribe to that because what you don't understand is that's great, but there are only five people on the floor at a time. You had six guys, one of which was Tayshaun, who could score, not in a large amount, but he could still score, but he was a mismatch against a lot of people. He could guard guards. He could guard centers. He was such a diverse utility for them. He was, I'm going to help Russ here, he was what they wanted Ben Wallace to always be that Ben Wallace could never be, an amazing defender with the actual ability to score. You could give Tayshaun the ball and expect 15 points out of him in a game.
Right.
You could.
Yeah, nothing great. But
I'm saying you do that, there's no Carmelo on the floor. And if there is Carmelo on the floor, you'd never get Rasheed because they probably try to put one of those two at power forward. So they never make the Rasheed trade, which ended up being a big thing. So to me, Chauncey was kind of the linchpin there that put everything into place for we can afford to go get this guy because we have a guy that can score in the backcourt. We can do this and that. So while Dwayne Wade's a great thing, I don't know that they would have ever been able to get Dwayne Wade to be the kind of point guard they needed him to be. Dwayne Wade's a great scorer. Him and Rip would have just fought for the ball way too much, and it really wouldn't have meshed out that well, in my opinion, personally, because Dwayne Wade was always a
danger.
Guy. What's that?
Said, yeah, that's a real risk.
It is.
That's a danger.
So, but at the same time, look, it's in the past, so we're all doing this on speculation. But also, you're talking about two guys that if you take them out, you have to rewrite the story. And these teams could be in such different places today. I mean, you take Datsyuk out. For all we know, that team hits rock bottom five, 6 years earlier, and we're on the upswing again. But then if that's the case, you don't have guys like Larkin and, you know, Zadina and all them on the team right now. But it's the same for the Pistons. If they never find that guard, those five that we talk about, that going to work Pistons team, probably gets blown up after a couple years. Dumars doesn't get to keep his job. And same thing, we probably hit rock bottom, and we're talking about having like Devin Booker on our team, but we're still building because we hit so low, we drafted early. That's the thing. It could go a million different ways. But at the end of the day, both of these guys brought titles to this city, so they're both going to be legends in this city. We've said it for years. I know Russ is such a stickler about it. I think Chauncey's number should be in the rafters for what he did. I know Russ not always over the moon about it, but
Hall of Fame and retiring number for a team, two wildly different things.
Okay, okay.
Like, Ben, I think his number should have been retired from the Pistons almost immediately.
Okay.
At that, I'm all in favor of.
But should 13 be in the rafters for the Red Wings? See? That was the point I was trying to make. I wasn't trying to say you were opposed to Chauncey. I was trying to say that there's a difference between the Pistons, because again, it's five guys on a 12-man roster. So they shine a lot more than you know, one guy that's five. There's five players out there, but it's a, you know, a 20-person roster. I'm guessing on that number. I could have been way off. But I think
you're very close.
They dress like 18 to 22. 22. Don't they?
Yeah.
Okay.
They dress 18 skaters and two goalies.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. It's a lot harder, but we've also had the debate with, I don't personally, and Jay, recall him, we're not going to stick on this for too long. I don't think Sergei's number should be in the rafters.
Oh.
But, yep. But at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
But 40 and 13, absolutely. They should both be up there.
I'm fine with it.
I'm fine with it.
I mean, I don't have any strong opinions because there's, I mean, the tough part with me with Datsyuk is I think 13, and it makes me think of Kozlov, which makes me think of the Russian Five, and then I get angry that none of them have their number retired, even ceremoniously, right? Like, put something.
That's the problem. 16 needs to be in the rafters. 16 at least should be in the rafters.
There,
it is unofficial. But I'm saying, enough of the unofficial. He's alive, and he can understand the moment. Give him that night. It's our generation. Like, we're all in our 30s now. We remember the car crash when we were 9. It's that time. Give him his night. Give him his, you know what? If none of them else, and a lot of them should be in there, if none of them else get their numbers up there, 16 should be up there for no other reason than the guy was, when you have Steve Yzerman, Nick Lindstrom, and Brendan Shanahan all say that Konstantinov was the best player on the team, that says something, because all your numbers are up there. Why the hell isn't his?
Let's go stand outside Little Caesars Arena right now and just cause a ruckus until they do it.
Let's book a flight to Edmonton and fucking nut slap Holland in the face for making terrible decisions for so long.
Expedia.com.
That's a raid on the brain, but I don't think you're going to be able to cross the border in the middle of a pandemic. Might have to slow burn this one.
Yeah, we might have to wait.
Damn it.
Wait till Edmonton comes to the back to Little Caesars Arena for a game. No, it's just, it's an interesting debate, and we thought we'd have it. I was curious to see how these guys felt about it. But at the end of the day, you're replacing two very, very instrumental players in the 2000s for us. And it creates that butterfly effect of it could go 1,000 different ways, and all of them don't lead back to what we got. So we're kind of blessed to have had it.
I'm not sorry for my chaos.
We're talking about Ashton Kutcher. Yep, we're talking about Ashton Kutcher.
Oh, of course.
I punked you both. There we go.
I was about to say, there it is.
All right, so moving on. Like I said, to open the show, this is where Russ turns his microphone off for 30 minutes and doesn't listen to a word we say. It's Masters week. It really is. But before we get into the actual of it, there's been video over the last couple days of apparently all Bryson DeChambeau is going to do while he's there is just hit driver on every single shot of every single hole, because that's the only club people have seen him hit. But he has said that he took what happened in November and he learned from it. Well, that's great. You're a mad scientist. I would hope you're learning from everything. But he seems to still think, Jay, that he can overpower this golf course and win overpowering this golf course. And I don't seem to understand it, because if you look at it, yes, Bombers have won here. But the other thing that the consistent thing for people that have won at Augusta is they are very accurate with their wedges and they are very good at putting. Two things that Bryson DeChambeau doesn't bring to mind when you talk about his game.
Yeah, I would enjoy Bryson if he would do some speed putting training. That would be pretty cool if he could just rifle off some balls on the green. But look, maybe he just subscribes to, you know, you practice harder than you actually play. This is just him going hard at practice. So when he's ready to play, he's going to calm down. He's going to launch bombs, but he doesn't have to launch 80 of them in 8 seconds. It's a little much, but it's also very on brand for Bryson, which I think is good for golf and, of course, all 13 of his sponsors that he probably carries right now. So seriously, listen, Rocket Mortgage, performance-inspired protein shakes, Bose,
Puma. He has NFT art now, which is this new thing I still don't quite understand because I'm old. And then Bridgestone. The dude is laced, and well, he gets all of his
on top
all
of
his
Puma
endorsements.
On top of Puma and Cobra.
Yeah. So do we actually have to, hearing all those sponsors, do we have to actually refer to him as Bryson DeChambeau presented by Rocket Mortgage?
Yeah, we do. We
is
do.
Is this a Michigan absolutely. State situation here?
Yeah, we're running into that Michigan State situation. I think he actually picked that spot. I think that's the requirement. If you win the Rocket Mortgage, you're sponsored by them for the year after, because that's what happened with Nate Lashley as well. So he might lose that one here in a couple months if he doesn't win the Rocket Mortgage again. But, Russ, even from – I'm not even – like, I understand you get the golf aspect of it, but I'm speaking more just from the physics and the what it does to you kind of thing. This just can't be something that if you're looking for consistency, you can feel that's the way to go about it. No one tells a batter, just go up there and swing as freaking hard as you can. Don't even look at the ball. Like, or you don't tell a defenseman, hey, look, we need you to get shots on net, but what we want you to do, slap shot as hard as you can. We don't care if you whiff. Slap shot it as hard as you can. I played football. No one ever told me to throw the ball as freaking hard as I could every time, because guess what? That won't work for you. I don't understand how you think that's the beneficial way to play a game that is all about finesse and touch.
I absolutely love those metaphors, and I have a counterpoint for each of them. Throw the ball as hard as you can. Hello, Matthew Stafford and Brett Favre breaking fingers.
Okay.
Take a slap shot from wherever, no matter what, if it's good or not. Hello, Shea Weber. How's it going? And just swing as hard as you can off your heels, and maybe you'll look at where it's going. Prince Fielder, it's been a while since you've been in town, but I still remember that violent swing. And the point of it is, no, it could have worked out better for all of them. you're absolutely right. Just the grip it and rip it thing only works to a point. And it doesn't work when accuracy is being put at a premium. Just from a kinetic standpoint, the harder you swing, the more stress you're putting on your ligaments. And the more repeated action you have in them, the more likely it is one of them's going to give out. This is just a physics thing, right? And I'm not going to be surprised. I hope it doesn't happen. I hope his protein shakes are strengthening up his ligaments, which is not a thing protein shakes do. However, I hope he's found a way to make it happen, because I'm terrified that I'm going to see clips sent, let's be honest, sent from you guys, because that's the only way I'm going to see it, where he winds up like this on a hole and his arm comes off. It just comes straight off and it hangs limp, because he's headed that way, that kind of violent twitching motion. I mean, I brought up Prince Fielder for a reason. He got hurt a fair amount.
Yeah, the guy can't look to his left anymore because his neck is so fouled up.
Yeah, and that's the risk with it. And it's never mind the fact that the faster you're moving like that, the harder it is to hone in on the exact mechanics you can. Maybe he's overcome that.
Yeah,
but it's another risk.
Well, I think that's why he has
ill-advised.
I think that's why he has to be in such peak shape, because if his body was any less in shape, it would probably break him. I mean, Jay, I'm going to give you some injuries here, and tell me if this person rings a bell to you. Broken knee and tore everything and still won a U.S. Open. Oh, by the way, has had 7, like, spine fusion surgeries, because at one point he couldn't even pick up his own children. I'm talking about Tiger Woods. If you're Bryson DeChambeau, you're looking at Tiger and going, oh, maybe I shouldn't swing as hard as I can all the time, because I'm going to be, the guy's still in his 20s. He's going to be 32, and he's going to need a walker to get to the tee because he just can't do it anymore. I mean, great, you're going to win some tournaments. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. But there's a reason that Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus can still go golfing when they're in their 70s and 80s, because they didn't try to kill themselves by putting that much torque on their back all the time.
Hey, what's the adage? Bright stars burn fast. Homeboy is just going to... He might do that to himself sometime soon, especially in the video, if you saw it, when he would launch a missile, because it's a registered missile once he hits it. he's getting a ball from probably his caddy. The aggression toward catching the ball and throwing the ball, matter of 3 feet, like, give me that next ball.
Steroids do that to you, unfortunately. They have a
hey,
way to affect
it's performance inspired creatine and protein powder
allegedly
and muscle milk. Brought to you by Boys Puma,
yeah.
Bridgestone.
Performance inspired.
So how
the 7 different products they carry.
how long until we get to call him Bryson to Shattered Bones?
Probably like six months the way it's going. Oh, my gosh. Look, at the end of the day, this isn't even a course you really want to do that on because it's not that wide open. There's not that much room for missing. This is the one where you just want to put it in the fairway, and you got to win this tournament on the – I mean, you got to win every tournament on the greens, but this is a tournament to do that. But also the thing is, they play different courses for everything else. This is the only one that never changes. This is the one where you can use the same yardage book every year because guess what? Nothing changed from the year prior. So it's that thing of – He seems to think he has it figured out, but it's like, well, nothing changed from November, buddy. They didn't do anything different, so I don't really know what you have figured out.
That's fascinating that they don't change it, because I found my new favorite least useful stat. Only 17 golfers have won at the Masters multiple times, which is the fewest out of any major.
Yep.
What, I guess from an outsider, what is causing that? How do you... Are you able to use the same distance book, as you said? Well, we're not seeing repeat champions.
Well, just because...
Pipe and pressure.
It is weird, but yeah, I mean, you got to think, though. Jack has 6. Tiger has 5. Phil has 3. There's a plethora of other... I mean, literally, there's 30, I think close to 30 majors are championships at the Masters are held by a total of like 5 or 6 guys.
Okay.
It's just, so it's there, just dominant. There were a couple people that just owned it. But
time.
Of everything else, the Masters really has been that one that it's almost like the March Madness thing. That's why it lines up so well. It's just that one shining moment. You see guys who have like come out of nowhere, like Zach Johnson. Like there was a 3 or 4 year stretch where 3 or 4 unknown guys won the Masters because they were just, their game suited the tournament. And they were able to do it. And they were doing it during, like, the Tiger tear when he was ripping through everything. And tail and golf courses. Like, he was just tearing through everything.
Jesus.
But it's just that thing of Augusta literally kind of has become that course where anybody really can go out and win it because it's just, it doesn't suit one game. But it, you know, if you can play good around the greens, you have a real good shot. It's just, it's kind of crazy that you see that. For every repeat, you get two guys that's the only tournament they ever won, but they can live off that because that's the great thing about the Masters. If you win the Masters, you can play the rest of your life. Doesn't matter if you're not even on the PGA Tour anymore. You can go back and play the Masters. Every other championship, which I think this is weird, every other championship has an expiration. So if you win the Open Championship, I think it's after 10 years. If you haven't qualified high enough, you can't play in the Open. So there are guys who have multiple Open Championships that if they don't reach a certain qualification, they cannot play in it that year. Whereas the Masters, you can be dead last in everything and go back and play it. That's why Phil gets to play in the Masters now, because he's won 3 of them. So
it's the crown jewel of the sport. So I think there's a lot of pressure for some of these non-developed superstars that you show up to Augusta, you could just crumble by your own demise, basically.
Well, and I mean, but you have to look at that. Guys like Rory, who Rory needs this one to create to finish the career Grand Slam. He'll have all 4 majors. It's only been done by like 4 or 5 guys in the history of this game. Now, obviously, Jack and Tiger have done it multiple times over, but other guys, it's only been done by a handful of people. So for Rory to do this would be great. Rory has a mental block on this course. He just can't do it. You look at Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth won the Masters in decisive fashion and has played terribly there ever since because it's in his head. Even guys who have had success there just can't get by it. There's a reason that Amen Corner, if you're a golfer, Amen Corner is a term you know because it's 3 holes of golf that if you don't play it well, you might as well just go home because you're never going to have a chance at this tournament. And it's just amazing. 12 kills all of them.
Wait, now we're talking about Tom Brady again?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
We are.
Stop it.
Tom Brady plays Amen Corner great. I don't know what you're talking about. So, but Jay, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. We watched this tournament. This is a tournament where there are certain parts of this course that anything less than perfect is going to take you immediately out of it.
Yep, 100%. It's why it's my favorite tournament. There'll be no house chores being done this weekend. It's going to be Jim Nance in my face all weekend long.
I give you a great story. This happened probably about 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know how we were able to work this out, but we had a group barbecue the weekend of the Masters at Justin's house. Justin and I did not leave a certain part of the porch because it was the only part of the porch you could see into his house to where the TV was. So, yes, we had conversations with our wives and friends. We also didn't miss a single shot of the Masters because we positioned ourselves in great, great spots. I had it on my phone playing while I was driving the 27 hours to Narnia to get to your house because you don't miss a shot. This is that kind of thing for... You know, if you're a hockey fan, that's the Stanley Cup. You know, this is that moment. Like, we get four of them, but this is the one that everybody watches because it's known that much more. It's just fun. So, that being said, we get to do our predictions. I feel like we just did this because it was 5 months ago, and I really am very excited to see it. And the only downside for it, in my opinion, because we're all fans of Dustin Johnson for one reason or another. A lot of it has to do with his wife. But... I feel bad for the guy. He doesn't even get the year-long title reign. He has to give it up after 5 months. Like, that's... Tiger got it for a year and a half. DJ gets it for 5 months. Like, just not fun.
He'll survive.
Yeah, but I think he's going to do okay. That being said, though, we're going to give our predictions for this year's Masters. We went with a usual cutoff, 40 to 1 and higher. You are considered a long shot. Lots of names to pick from, so we're gonna let Jay go first here. Jay, give me your favorite and your long shot.
All right. Well, as is tradition with me, I'm dipping into the BBS well. New thing. Got to catch on. Got to pay attention. Mm-hmm. That would be the Bryson, Brooks, and Spieth well, because I will always be picking one of these three as my favorite. Brooks is banged up. His neck. He's 19 days removed from knee surgery. He's still playing. I have some money sprinkled on him, but he's not my favorite. Spieth, would you ever trust Spieth to go back to back?
No.
He just won Valero last weekend. There's no way in hell. He's spent.
He's making improvements. I'll give him that. But to me, I think if I'm him, I almost would have rather lost that tournament by one stroke because it would have given you the little extra, you need to do it. He's already won at Augusta. So I like the guy. I think he's a great player. But no, back to back just doesn't seem like something he's got in him right now.
All right, we're locked up. No chutzpah for Spieth. He's not coming in. So we are going with the long bomber himself, Bryson DeChambeau. I really like what's coming out of his corner. It's almost like it feels like a fight. That's why I use the expression corner, because he's got all this energy and spotlight on him. I'm going to ride with Bryson to the sunset. In terms of a long shot, I was hoping Colin Morikawa would fall in our terms.
Sadly,
for a long shot. He's a dude that he'll have long odds, he'll have zero media attention, and he'll win the damn thing. Yep. Like, he'll come out of nowhere and take these championships. But I'm going to go with Matthew Fitzpatrick just because he's past 40.
Okay, I like
and
it.
And that's it.
can we, real quick, because we talked about it, what are the odds, at what hole will Bryson slice it four holes over and break his driver in half out of steroid angle?
The second hole of Thursday.
And then he'll still drive greens with his 3-wood because he can hit his 3-wood 300 yards. That's fine. All right, so Bryson and Fitzpatrick, I like it. Russ, over to you for your favorite and long shot.
First off, though, Justin, does that well, is that like an underground river that fills it, or do you just bring it over from a nearby brook?
Oh, my God.
Always from the nearby brook.
I need to know who you're carrying water for, that's all. The jokes don't stop here. Sorry, guys. I promise I've actually looked into this a little bit, and that's where I came up with that stat from earlier that only 17 golfers have won the Masters multiple times, and being the fewest of any major, and only 8 have won it more than 3 times. So shamefully, I won't be taking Dustin Johnson as my favorite, because with that little of occurrence of repeat, I can't take someone to win back-to-back. Okay. Even if it was only 5 months ago.
You know what this means, though, right? The last time you didn't take DJ,
win.
DJ won.
Yeah.
Okay,
win.
Okay.
Put money on it. Yep, go put money on it. Okay. And shamefully. So it left me picking between someone who's never won it or making a pun.
So you're going to go with the pun.
Me,
yeah, here comes the pun.
Don't get ahead of me. You know what's coming, but you just wait for it, damn it, please. you guys have talked up this tournament a lot as something that, hey, would be a lot of fun to watch, but let's be honest, what am I going to do instead? I'm probably go find a book and I'm going to read. I might just Patrick read.
You know what? You know what sucks about that? Like, he said that and I got excited. I literally was like, dude, you guys saw my Amazon list. I've got like 4 books about the Masters if you want one. I was so excited, and then he pulls that shit.
You're welcome. But he is top 10 in almost every putting category so far this season for the PGA Tour. So if he can get it to the green, few people have been putting better than him. Kind of a long shot as far as favorites at 28-1, but I couldn't resist the pun. My long shot, I'll give away the how the sauce is made here. I forgot to pick a long shot earlier, so I was scraping at the bottom of the barrel, and I thought, well, easy jokes. We'll go with cliches. 2 first names. Never trust a guy with 2 first names. How about a guy with 2 last names? You got to trust him, right? Harris English, 2 last names. Mm-hmm. Let's win it, buddy. 80-1.
80-1. Wow, going real long shotty here. I like it. Okay, well, for my long shot, I'm going with a guy. He's got green jackets already. He's comfortably fitted for them. He's a great player, known by a lot of people. Jay already knows where I'm going with this. I'm going with 2-time Masters champion, 50-1 odd, Bubba Watson as my long shot. This guy's only 2 majors are at Augusta. He has been there for the last week and a half preparing for this, as well as Bubba is an advocate for this game. And I love it for this because I over the last couple of years since they started this, I've watched every second of it. Every year, the weekend before the Masters, now they are holding the women's amateur there. And they let these girls go play at Augusta. And Bubba is one of the first people standing off 18 to shake everybody's hand and congratulate him for that. I love the guy for that. And then he hangs out for the drive, chip, and putt that they let the kids do leading up to the Masters. It's a great way to grow the game. He's there for all of that, watching the kids, cheering them on and all that. The guy just loves Augusta, and he wants to be successful there, and I'd like to see it. So my long shot is going to be Bubba Watson, and then my favorite, a guy we actually mentioned. He needs this for the career Grand Slam. I think he's going to do it. He's taking a little time off, tried to get back in the headspace. He's playing great golf. He's a he's a Hall of Famer right now, and he's our age. So it just tells you how good he really is at this game. I'm going to go with Rory McIlroy to get the career Grand Slam, to win the Masters. I like it. He's coming off at 14-1. Only the, 1, 2, 3? He's 5th down on the odds. So there's only a couple guys in front of him. Yes, one of them is Bryson DeChambeau, but he's going to break his back on 13 one day. So, but yeah, for me, it's Rory McIlroy. I like how he's playing. I really think he can do this one, and it'll just be fun to see. And then, of course, me being a crazy person, I had to put some money on Phil Mickelson. You can't win 3 green jackets and not be someone that I'll put a little bit of money on because the magic's there. You clearly know how to win there. So we'll see what comes of that. Lastly, before we wrap this up, because I know he's going to at least have 1 or 2 good ones for us. He always does. It is time for Sergeant Salty's Bet of the Week.
Let's do this. What did we say we were going to name this segment last time? Aiding and Abetting?
Aiding and Abetting.
It's a robbery joke. Okay, so let's go to the bet. Russ, I'm going to tee yours up first because you don't know what this is. I'll give you a couple minutes to put some fancy math together for us here, all right? While Eric has a good, long, complicated bet to consider. Russ, you can't look at the score right now because they're actively playing.
Oh, damn.
Edmonton Oilers to win versus Ottawa and 6 goals in the game. 6 plus goals. So call it 6.5. Make it
total.
Yeah, I take the over. Total goals, yes, total goals, not just for Edmonton, okay. Even though they can have nights like that. Believe it or not, only plus 175. So that's not crazy odds. 7 goals, what's called 7 goals, Edmonton to win against Ottawa. You think about that for a second. Eric.
You ponder that.
I will ponder that.
Eric, while Russ is looking at math and carrying the one, I need you to tell me what your ideal foursome is. And yes, we're still talking golf.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, my wife and someone else's
wife. My wife again.
Someone else's wife. And if that wife's interested, you know. My ideal foursome to play golf with.
I'm going to give them to you.
Oh, okay. You're going to give them to me. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to give you 3 foursomes. Okay. You got to pick one to hit your wagon to. Okay?
Wait, do I? So we're playing a fivesome.
Now, you just get to watch. With them.
I'm gonna, just to watch. Okay.
All right, let me slow this down. I'm going to give you four golfers that are actively competing in the Masters this weekend, and I want you to pick a foursome to put money on.
Gotcha.
If you want to have sex with them, that's totally your inclination later.
Tell me who they are.
Okay. Your first pairing is Bryson, Rory, Wolf, and Champ.
Okay.
Plus 525. John Rahm, Cantlay, Shoffley, and Matsuyama.
Matsuyama, okay.
Your last one, DJ, Spieth, Reed, and Sergio. I'll tell you your odds, but you got to pick a foursome, and one of them wins, it hits. This is a real bet, by the way.
I think your dogs are trying to tell me which one to take. The barking has gotten louder as we went. See, just because that last pairing has players I love watching, but it also has like two players that I loathe and can't stand, so I don't want to waste my time on it. I think I would have to go with that first one. I really do. I think I would have to go with Bryson, Champ, Matt Wolf, and I believe it was Rory.
And your boy Rory.
Yeah, I think that one would be fun to watch. There'd be some really good golf in that one.
So you get four guys for the price of one, odds at 525. Versus Russ's Edmonton Oilers versus Ottawa and seven goals in the game. So, gentlemen, which bet are we hitching ourselves to?
Either way, Russ, you're scoring in one way or another.
Hey!
You get four guys for the price of one. Come on. I mean,
let's see if Russ has any ammunition on this bet for him.
I'm actually just finishing up my calculations on this real quick. 39.
Should I go see what my dog wants?
Phil, we're using the Phil.
Okay. So all I had time to do was look up Edmonton so far this season. So in 44% of their games, they've scored at least seven goals combined between them and their opponents. So almost half the time. The implied odds for plus 175 is 36.4. So we're trying to get better than 36.4 implied odds here. And I think they beat the Senators. Is it cheating if I find out if Matt Murray's playing or not? Because that could really sway some things. We might get six goals against him alone. But let's be conservative. Oof. Wow, that actually worked out different than I thought it would. If I'm conservative and I give Edmonton a 60% chance of winning, include the 44% chance that they are going to have at least seven goals in this game, that's 26% combined percentage there, which falls below our 36.4. So while my inclination would have said, yeah, that game's going to have 80 goals in it, neither of those teams can play defense. Based on history so far this year, yeah, it probably won't hit at a worse odd than that. I've definitely seen – I'm more confident in that bet than I would be in any golfer. So if I had to pick, I'm probably still picking that one. But surprisingly, I don't like this Edmonton bet.
Then would you like to join me and Eric in our foursome and then come on to the other side of the bet?
Dude, at this point, it's not a foursome. It's just a get-together. Like,
it's okay. I'm a voyeur. I'll just watch the foursome. Who is the four again?
Bryson DeChambeau, Rory McIlroy, Matt Wolf.
Dude, we're going to teach you how to say this guy's name at some point.
Nope, no, we're
not. It's not McIlroy, it's McIlroy.
McIlroy.
All right, wait, real quick though, Jay. What was that the one you went with, or did you have another one of those foursomes you'd rather watch?
That would be my foursome. I actually bet on it. I actually bet on the Edmonton game. It's halfway through. There's only two goals in the game. I'm losing it.
Yeah, not going.
And that is your bet.
All right, well, you hear the music, so you know what that means. That's going to do it for us here in Armchair Sports Talk. I can honestly say this is the one weekend where I won't be upset when Justin doesn't text me back, because he'll have a legitimate reason not to text me back. But as always, he's my Masters buddy, and I know for a fact this will be the weekend we text each other more than any other weekend. So it should be fun. Jay, you just got the new clubs. Make sure you get out there and swing a couple. Try to be just like Rory McIlroy.
I will. And you know what? In all fairness, your wife texted me like at 8 o'clock last night. I didn't respond till 10 o'clock today. So it's not just you, buddy. I love everyone equally.
And as always, the stat man, Russ Ivanek. Look, we put him through 30 minutes of uncharted water, and he held his own. Honestly, if that doesn't tell you it, me telling you it should do it. The guy makes us sound a lot smarter than we really are. And honestly, we're not that smart. Ross, I appreciate it, buddy.
It's a low bar. And as long as I'm trying to jump over instead of playing limbo with it, it's probably a good day. But it's a blast. Golf talk or not, hey, sometimes it's interesting. I learned something new. It's a blast. And I look forward to hearing how it went from you guys, because
I'm
going to go read.
Yeah, you're not watching. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.